Marion, are you on? Radio. Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Guest Marion Jacobs, a psychosocial therapist and BA philosopher, joins us again this week to discuss her extensive research into the penal system and how they affect the people. Marion and I had a problem last week, and I'm hoping that we don't have it again today. But she works in the Dutch prison system with restorative justice. And from that experience, she developed a vision on the approach of incarceration called deeper justice. Deeper justice means literally doing justice to oneself on a deeper level. This is further interpreted as time in prison used for gaining self-insight and insight into what led to the crime. So it's not about why a person offends, but the question as to what actually led to that moment that he or she committed the crime. Ms. Jacobs concluded there is no judgment, but a search behind judgment for the person behind the incarcerated man or woman. I find Ms. Jacobs to have enormous insight into the causes, effects, the downfalls, and unfortunate consequences into the lives of so many incarcerated individuals. She's going to share her experiences and her research and findings, in addition to interacting with prisoners in the U.S. and Netherlands. Ms. Jacobs will also discuss the communication from two complete different worlds with different codes and cultures as in the free world, where there is a current fight against racism. She will focus mainly on how penalty is determined, what judges look at in the individual and or various situations, in addition to other decision-making factors. She will expand the discussion to include detention damage, solitary confinement, what the housing of prisoners looks like, their daily programs, the health care in prison, and forensic clinics. So I'm not going to waste any more time on this. I'm going to introduce Marion Jacobs, and I hope that she is able to hear us and on with us, as we had a difficult time last week coming from the Netherlands onto the United States radio show. Marion, are you on with us? Hello? Marion? Can you hear me? We're going through this again. There was a problem last week, and it's happening again, so I don't know if we're going to be able to do the show this time. Let me see if I can invite her from here. Okay. Marion, are you on with us? Hello? Yeah, we went through this last week. I don't think it's going to work again. We got it the last week. It was on at the end. Okay, let me try connecting again. Marion, are you on with us? I don't know why we keep having this problem. Marion, can you hear? Hello? Marion? We went through this last week, and it was towards the end. The first half hour was a disaster. I don't know if we're going to be able to do it this time, because this is a problem we had last week, and it took a long time before we were able to finally connect. So we may have to cancel this show. I don't even know if she can hear us. Marion, can you hear me? Mm-hmm. try something here. She is on with us. I just sent her another invite to see if she might want to click on this link. Please fix it. Not working. Let me try one more thing. Mary, can you hear me? We can't seem to get this right. It's a problem, and I don't understand why we're having this problem. Let's see.
Hello?
Marian? Hello,
yes,
can you hear me okay? I am so sorry.
Leona.
This is the second time this has happened. How are you?
I am fine, thank you. How are you?
Good, good.
Oh,
I want to welcome you once again. At least it didn't take a half an hour this time to finally connect. So, Marian, I just introduced you to the audience. We weren't able to get a connect from you at first, so maybe you want to talk a little bit about some of the things that we spoke about last week, but also just to talk a little bit about yourself and what your expertise is.
Well, I am a psychosocial therapist based on the depth psychology of Jung. I am also a philosopher, and currently I am doing the master. I passed my first year of the master this week. I am doing research on the Dutch prison system and the comparison with the American prison system, and it's very interesting to see the huge differences, but also the similarities. There are also similarities between the two systems. I have worked in the Dutch prison system with restorative justice, with groups and individuals. I also, and that's what I didn't say last week, I also have worked with victims for 2 years. And I find it important to mention that too, because I'm familiar with both sides, so the side of the victims and the side of the offenders. And now I am developing a vision that's called Deeper Justice. And Deeper Justice is about the approach of incarcerated people, the human approach of incarcerated people. So that's what I'm doing.
Now, can you speak a little bit more on the deeper justice?
Please, can you repeat your question?
Deeper justice. Can you speak a little bit more on that? Because I think that's very interesting. I've never heard of that before until last week when you had spoken about it. But can you talk a little bit more on deeper justice and your findings?
Yes, deeper justice is something I am developing myself, and it stems from what I saw when I worked with restorative justice programs. As a lot of people might know, restorative justice is a process of healing between offenders and victims, and well, they hope that they can come to regret and forgiveness. But what I discovered was that There are all kinds of programs for victims before they start with restorative justice. And there are not really programs that that are for offenders before they start the process of restorative justice. And what you see then, when someone has committed a crime and he is not able to get to self-insight and insight in what led him to the crime, if he does not get that insight, then he goes into the process of restorative justice. And what you see then is that the offender gives answers and show behavior that's what he thinks that society wants to see. And deeper justice means literally doing justice to oneself. And I think when you look at people in prison, then, you know, I think that an important thing to realize is that everybody starts his life as an innocent individual. You know, we come to the world, we are born innocent. If you picture, you know, we are on the radio, so I cannot show pictures, but if you picture a little baby, well, that's, we all start that way. So I think what is important is that an incarcerated man or woman gets the chance to get insight in what happened in my life, what was of influence in my life that led to that crime that I have committed. And it can be anything. It can be things that went wrong in youth, but it also can be culture, psychological problems, disorders. It can be anything, but the only thing that's important is that he gets to know what the wires are. You know, everything is connected. I call that web of influence. So he should have to get a chance to get insight in what happened in my life, and what did it to me, and how did I come to that crime. And I think that also is very important, because it has to do with learning to feel responsibility. See, when you commit a crime, at that moment you did not feel responsibility. So it's very important when that man insight in how did responsibility play a role in my life. Have my parents been responsible? Have I been responsible? When people get incarcerated, responsibility is taken away. But if they get released again, then they get in the free world. But freedom always goes together with responsibility. So that's a very important thing to get insight in for the incarcerated man or woman. And I think if he gets insight in these issues in his own personal life, then he can go into the process of, you know, the process he does with the victim, a restorative justice, because only then the healing process of restorative justice becomes an equal process, because then they are equal human beings who are together in a process of healing. And otherwise, it's the victim that has a kind of power, because the victim can choose to forgive or not to forgive, and the offender has to go on his knees. It doesn't feel right. So I think that doing deeper justice to oneself is, for me, a very important key, and that can be done everywhere and at every moment, even in the existing system in the United States. That's a long story, Ilona.
Yeah. I want to talk to more about what you were talking about, the difference in the way they house prisoners in the Netherlands, European countries, compared to the U.S.
Yes, I would like, sorry.
You touched on that last week, but it was very interesting on some of the programs you spoke of, some of the other things you spoke about. And I know you're going to be talking about it now anyway, so
what I would like to do is give you a picture about the Dutch prison system. And I think it's very interesting while I give that picture that you listen, that you hear the differences. There are huge differences, of course, but that there also are similarities. And then it's interesting to ask yourself, hey, but if there are also similarities, what's then the reason why the Netherlands is doing much better than the United States? That's an interesting question. So I will give you a picture about the Dutch prison system, okay? Is it okay that I start with that?
Please, yes.
Okay.
I'd enjoy it.
Well, yeah, it's going to be a story, like a story. Well, in the Netherlands, we have about 24 prisons across the country. And we have about 36,000 people who enter the system each year. It might be a little bit different each year, of course, but it's about 36,000 people. And about 11,000 people are currently incarcerated. So that's the first. Then we have six types of housing. And there I see a little bit a similarity with the United States, because we also have, you also have minimum security to maximum security. That's what we have too. But we have six stages. The first one is the lightest one. I go from light, from minimum to maximum. The lightest sentence someone can get is no incarceration at all, but he has to do. And I say he, but it also can be a she, of course. Huh? The lightest one of sentencing is that one is not incarcerated, but he has to do community service. And he has, of course, a criminal records, but he has to do community service. Then we have the ankle bracelet. I don't know if you have heard of it. I believe that in the States that they also want to introduce that. That's a lot electronic house arrest. Light, that's when someone has committed a light crime and the sentence is short. Then we have close custody, that's light is determined by the prison. The programs are fixed. Security is high. There are also fences. There are strict rules for weekend leave. There is a lot of control on contraband, drug abuse. In these units, there are also cells for solitary confinement, and I will come back later on that subject. And that's for people who haven't been sentenced yet, and people who have to do long sentences. Then we have half-closed custody. That's for people who have committed gotten a lighter sentence or are almost released. It's also a bit preparation for their release. And that means that in the weekends, people go home. There are a lot of programs that prepare them for release, the return into society. There are visits. And the housing is used for people who come from closed custody. So they could go from the closed custody to half-closed custody. Then they go to an open unit. And in an open unit, the prisoner is only imprisoned from Monday till Friday. the holidays and the weekends, they go home. There are only a few rules. There are no fences. But they are almost released back into society. So that's, there are stages. And then we also have a very secured prison. The other ones are stages and what can be in one prison. So we do not have types of housing are in one prison. But we also have the prison inside the prison, and there are only 10 people or less in that prison. That's called the EBI, and if I translate it to English, then it's an extra secured prison. That's for people who are extremely dangerous, who committed crimes with a very high impact on society. Do you still hear me? Because I hear a beep. Do you still hear me? Leona? Leona? Are you there?
Yes.
You are. Are you there? Leona? Hello, Leona? Come on. Leona? Can you hear me? Leona? Leona? Wat is er gebeurd daar? Hallo?
Mariam, can you hear me?
Yes, yes, I can hear you. Ah, you're back.
Okay.
Gladly.
Okay.
So let me go on with my explanation, okay?
Yeah.
Yes? Okay. I was at the extra secured prison, yes?
Okay, we're on to the maximum security prisons?
Yes. The types of housing, okay. And I went from light to more secure, and the most secure, the extra secure prison. It's a prison inside a prison. It has place for only 10 people, and those are people who are extremely dangerous, who committed crimes with very high impact on society. Most people serve very long sentences, and they were built because people managed to flee from prison. That was the start. Visits are very limited, highly secured, and there's room for 24 people, but now there are only about 5 or 6 people housed in there. So those are the 6 stages, 6 types of housing. And I saw a little bit of similarities in the States. But let me go on. You also like to know what a cell looked like. Right.
Yeah, I was wondering about the housing facilities. I know that there are prisons in Netherlands that even Norway and other places like that, that they don't have the bars themselves. They have they're like dormitories, and they have educational programs and all of these things.
Yeah, and they have
because
a lot of
because we have. in the maximum secure prisons here, but not only the maximum, but also the medium and the minimal. Most of these prisons and jails are steel bars. They're not like dormitories, and that's what I wanted to know more about, because you not only touched on it last week, but also on a YouTube video from the Norway, they show these facilities that look like houses. They look like apartments, and they had all these beautiful programs, and it was nothing like it is in the U.S.
No, it's much more like a home, and that's also in the Netherlands. In the Netherlands, we also have no bars, and we have windows with curtains in front of the windows. They can open them and close them like we do in our homes. They have the shower and the toilet in the cell, but then apart in the cell, not in the middle of the cell, because that's very dehumanizing when you sit on your toilet and staff walks by and looks in your, you know, you sees you sitting there. That's animalistic, and that's not what's happening in the thing is, Leona, I think, and I've been thinking about it again after our last interview. In the Netherlands, human beings get sent, get incarcerated, and human beings get out, get released. And what I see in the United States is human beings get in, and there they are transformed into inmates. You know, I see those big. Prisons like factories of inmates, and that makes it so sad, because inside the prison they are transformed to an inmate with all the problems, and then they get released after decades sometimes, or many times, and then society expects them to be human. But how can you be human if you have been transformed to an inmate, and an inmate is something else than a human being, the way I see it.
Exactly.
And, you know, even if people say, I have also been thinking about that, even if people in community say, I hate the offenders, and it's their own fault, and they are bad human beings, blah, 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 well, then you should want prison reform for the community. If you don't want to do it for the people inside the prison, well, then do it for the community. You cannot... there are, of course, a lot of people who, family victims or whatever, you know, who only want revenge, but where does that stop? And retaliation, that's the word. You know, for a victim, retaliation never ends. And another, so
retaliation.
We have to... Yeah, thank you.
In America, this country, it's about retaliation and vengeance. It's about hatred. It's, you know, racism. There's so many factors that play into the incarceration. And as I mentioned last week, prison is a stereotype, you know, and you hear that, you probably heard it even in the Netherlands from the U.S. when they say if they did the crime, they do the time. But what they don't realize is inside the prisons in this country, it goes beyond that time. I'm going to the thing is with these prisoners, they go into prison and they suffer beyond punishment. In this country, there are connections. People have connections. There's so many different reasons why when they go inside, they're treated less than human. And this is where the comparison is, too, between the two countries, or this country versus other countries. Because these prisoners go into prison, and there are prison officials, prison guards that already have hatred for them, for their pigmentation. And you touched on it last week with the racism in the prisons as well, as it is out here in the communities. But
yes,
these are some of the things that prisoners, individuals make mistakes and they go into prison. And there are some really bad ones, like you mentioned. There's some real bad prisoners that are either serial killers or they're terrorists. And, you know, a lot of these prisoners we have to look at as well. But a lot of these people that have made mistakes, they've made their mistakes, and they are.
Well, you know,
you mentioned
something
about the judges looking at the individuals in the various situations. How does that play in when you mention the judges?
Well, first of all, we have much shorter sentences because law enforcement does not only look at the crime that has been committed, but it, law also looks at the personality of the defendant. That's very important. And they also look at the circumstances in which the crime took place. Because a crime is never an isolated thing. You know, it's embedded in a lot of circumstances, personal things, personal issues. And they look at that too. They also look, they look at the circumstances in which the crime took place and the impact on the victim. That's what they also look at. But they also take in consideration that incarceration might not always be the best solution. You see, if someone commits a light crime, he might be better off when he has an electronic ankle bracelet or he does community service. Because there is a big chance that the defendant loses his job, has to quit his study if he was studying, he loses his home, he gets into issues with the relationship he might be into or his marriage ends. So when he gets released, the defendant has nothing and nobody to rely on. That's what you also see in the States. And the judges here take that, all those things into account, and they do that for the defendant, but also for community. So it is important that also society benefits from the situation. You know, if you as a society have difficulties with seeing the human side of the offender, well, then think about society. Society benefits when the judge not only look at the crime, but also at the circumstances, personality, etc., etc. And when there is committed a high crime, the judge will enforce a prison sentence. And of course, the need of retaliation plays an important role when a huge crime is committed, when somebody is murdered or something. But after a non-violent crime, a community service as punishment makes more sense. And also, change of circumstances can be determined for that. For instance, when someone has changed his life on a positive way in the meantime and regrets his crime really because he got to insight, when a judge is convinced of that, he can choose for a community service for a lighter sentence because a lighter sentence will not disrupt the positive change the defendant has been making. So the judge also looks at that. And I have also seen in the United States, there was a man who had 45 years, but in the first 20 years, he did every program, he did very much his best, he really developed himself very positive, but it was not taken into account. The judge only looked at the crime that was committed 20 years ago. He didn't see the change that the person had made. And then you have never a second chance. You see, and if you then get a defendant or hits the street, then he becomes a danger because he hasn't learned anything.
Yeah, there is much talk about parole reform in the United States as well, because most people on the parole board are law enforcement. They're not psychologists. They're not social workers. The majority of them. And so there's been a lot of talk about reforming the parole board as well. And as far mm-hmm. as the programs you're talking about, there are prisoners who have tried to take educational courses, have tried to take productive things while they're inside, and they're prevented by the prison officials.
Yes.
But I want to go back just for a brief minute regarding the stereotypical views of prisoners. I worked years ago with a prisoner that came out, and it was sad. I learned that his mother, she was a drug addict. She had two daughters and a son. She actually set the apartment on fire with her kids in the closet one time, and they were able to escape. But her son, he was just, I think he was 10 years old. She brought some men home, and she allowed the men in exchange for drugs. to actually molest her child. And this went on for a long time. So this prisoner, as he grew older, he was bitter. He was in and out of trouble all the time. His mother has since died. His sister called me one time and asked me if there was some way that I could call the hospital and connect her son so he could talk to her before she passed away. All he wanted was answers to why, you know, she allowed that these things to happen to him. But I believe he was back in. He may be released again. I don't know. But the crimes get worse. And there are cases of prisoners who were productive before going to prison. You know, there's one, he was in his final year of college, 4 years, and got involved in a first relationship. It turned out toxic. And he disclosed to the person about something that happened to him as a child, also being molested as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And these things weigh on these individuals. But people don't look at the circumstances. As you mentioned with the one that you would be for justice, you know, they look into their
influence.
Own being, but, yes.
Yeah, it's about the web of influence. But, of course, the example you just mentioned about the man who has been molested as a little boy by all these men his mother brought back to home, he should not end up in prison, but in a hospital, in a psychiatric hospital, to get help with dealing with all these scars he has from his youth.
And it's sad because people, like I say, they stereotype because, yeah.
But what I see, and I also mentioned that last week, but all, what I see is, you know, when I look at the picture of the Netherlands and I look at the picture of the States, of course, there is a huge difference, of course. But there also are, when you look at the system itself, the way it's organized, then there are also similarities. And that was important for me to see, because things are not going wrong, because in the States, they have the people who work there have the wrong mindset. And what I also want to mention, if I look at COs in the States, if I have it right, then you have the COs who take care of the inmates. I call them inmates. I'm sorry, I hate that word, but I call them inmates because that's what they become. But in the Netherlands, we have different types of people who work there. We have the people like the COs. They are... you know, they have to take care of the building. They have to take care that they know where is everybody. You know, is somebody in a cell? They have to lock, close the doors, open the doors, all those things. You know, the daily, that they open the doors in the mornings at 8 o'clock, they close them up again. But we also have a level of workers in there who have done an education, do I say it right? Do you know the word pedagogic? Pedagogic?
What is it?
Pedagogic. No. You can compare it to a psychological training study. They are not psychologists, so they have had a training to mentor. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So there is a level of workers who take care of that people are in their cells or when they get out of cells, you know, those things. And there's also a level of people who work in there, like they are the mentors of the imprisoned people. And they have a psychological education. Yeah. So, and that's not what I see in the States. In the States, I only see COs, and they are only almost military trained, you see. So they're like,
yeah.
I have seen it with my own eyes. I was once in a visiting room in a prison in the United States, and a man did something that he was not supposed to do. It wasn't very exciting, but he wasn't supposed to do that. And the CO, he walked to him, and he stood in front of him, and he only stares the eight in the eyes. Do you still hear me?
Yes.
Are you there? Okay. And
yes.
He didn't say anything to the inmate. He only stared him in the eyes, and he was provoking him. And it was as, you know, I felt as if my blood went out of my body because it scared me to see it. The CO, he stood in front of the prisoner and he only looked him in the eyes on a very provoking way. And I thought, it's like he tries to get the inmate aggressive. You know, he tries to tempt him. And another colleague of him, she took the CO away. But I thought, how many times is it happening that the inmate is being provoked by the CO? Because CO seems to want to get rid of his own tension. And another thing, what I see in the States is a lot of this is a mystery. What happens behind the bars with the incarcerated people, the beatings, all these things, there are so many examples of that. And I had to call prison a couple of times for personal information. And when I get people on the phone, they are very cold. They are not friendly. They are not human. I only had one prison doctor who was very human. That's the only one. And the rest was cold. Cold but polite. And that's, you know, that's a behavior that's the whole prison system is infected with that.
Exactly. I actually visited a prisoner in Pennsylvania. This was several years ago, and his wife and his three little kids were visiting with him. This was in a Pennsylvania prison, and everybody's in the room, in the visiting room, and all of a sudden, these three guards went up and started yelling at him. They told his wife to leave with the kids, and they weren't doing anything. They were just talking, and the wife started crying, and the children were crying, and they took the man out. And I wanted to say something because it really upset me when everything was going so smooth, and then all of a sudden they disrupted this family like that. But someone said, no, don't. You can't interfere because then they'll take it out on somebody else. So,
yes,
you know, but
that's what
I thought
I felt
about
too.
That, and I, yeah, it's, and it happened even in the prisons here.
Yeah, exactly. And what you see is that what they do with the man in the prison, it also reaches the family. You know, there are 2.2 million people incarcerated, but there are also 2.2 million families incarcerated. Because, you know, you
exactly.
were in that visiting room and you couldn't say anything because you knew if you are going to say something, then somebody else is going to be a victim too from the COs. That's exactly, I also wanted to interrupt because it was crazy what I saw.
Yeah.
I will never forget it. But I thought, if I'm going to say that, who is going to be the next victim when visiting hours are over? What is happening then?
And there was
you
a time
see?
When prisoners were afraid to speak out because they were afraid of retaliation. But the abuses were going on so bad anyway that the prisoners began to feel like, well, if we don't say anything, we're going to get beaten. If we do say it, we're going to get beaten. So at least we're getting it out. So that's why a lot of them now are speaking out. There's a lot of prisoners that are talking about what's going on inside.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to the
mm-hmm.
and politicians are now starting to see it for themselves. So there are politicians out there trying to make change. But the media needs to get more involved because the media is quick to talk about the things that a prisoner may do, but they don't bring up the facts, and they know these things are going on because advocates, politicians are out there speaking about it. But the media needs to get more involved, and they need to go inside, and they need to find out what's going on with these prisoners because they're doing the time. They're doing the time. There's no doubt about it. But
that's
beyond
exactly.
that, it doesn't need to happen.
No, what I think, and what I think is when you talk about politicians, I understand what you say about media. That's very important, especially now, because there's a lot of media, social media too. But if you look at politicians, they also really have to understand that you can make a change in prison without, because politicians also have to look at the cost of everything, you know. Of course, we bless you. That's what I wanted to say. But politicians have to get aware of the fact that a major change can be made without that it costs a lot of money, because it's the mindset. If you look at, when I look at the maximum security prison inside the Netherlands, what I told you about it just, it's very, very maximum secure. Those COs, they have to be very strict. They have to follow rules. It's all the same as what you see in the United States. But at the same time, they stay human. You can be strict. You can be clear, follow protocols, follow rules on a human way. Do you feel what I mean?
Exactly.
So, and that's what politicians should have to know, because politicians always have to do with budgets and all that stuff. But it doesn't cost anything to be human. And another thing I think is that people who work there, because that's the biggest problem, people who work inside the prisons, they are closest to the incarcerated people. And what I said is, you know, you have the COs in the Netherlands, but you also have a level of people who have psychology training, and they are the mentors, you know, of the incarcerated people. And that's the level I don't see back in the United States. In the United States, I only see military. When I looked around,
exactly,
when I came into the visiting room of the prison I have visited, it was like military. There was a wall with a very big sign, officer of the week. There were all kinds of rules. There were all kinds of words like responsibility, sincerity. You know, that was also, that was then what incarcerated people have to learn. Well, how can you learn to be responsible if responsibility is taken away from you?
You know? Exactly. As I mentioned also, I believe last week, we have an epidemic in this country of addiction and also mental health issues. Now, there was a mentally retarded individual. He was a prisoner in Florida. This was about 7 years ago, Daryl Rainey. They put this man, a mentally ill man, in the shower, and they turned it up to 180 degrees. They scalded that man alive. You probably heard about it. And
yes,
it was so sad because the prisoners could hear this man screaming for his life. They said by the time they got to this man, his muscle, his skin, everything was all separated from his bones. Now, they said that these people got away with it. They never even apologized to this person's family. But these are things that go on, and it's you know, when they talk about training, it's beyond training. It's the individuals that are doing this that they need to sort out and get rid of. Look at now these peaceful protests that have been going on worldwide with this Black Lives Matter. What's happening in a situation like that? It's been pretty peaceful lately. And all of a sudden, the government leader of this country now is sending out troops. They're not even identifying themselves with unmarked cars, and they're going and they're beating these peaceful protesters that's causing all this problem, because they know they can get away with it. And this is what's happening in the prison, because they know they can get away with it.
Yeah, and the question should be, if you take that example of that man in the shower, I read it too, and that man was almost going to be released. He only had 1 year to do or less.
Yeah, really?
Why? Please. What? Yes, because these COs who did it, they are the real offenders. And what is it? Because if you do that, such a thing, then you should be locked up in a maximum security prison, because it's beyond sick. I have no words for it. And that's so scary that those people, because a lot, you know, what I find scary in the United prisons is sometimes I have the feeling as if it's also with these long sentences, and also when someone has a DR, then he gets the punishment. He cannot get visits for a year. That's insane. We have solitary confinement, but for the max of 2 weeks. And when somebody is in isolation, in a solitary treatment, in the Netherlands, every day he sees a doctor. A doctor is visits his cell, is looking if he is okay. If he cannot cope with it, he is brought back to his own cell, and then he gets his television and his radios taken away because he has a punishment of solitary confinement. But that's only for maximum 2 weeks. In the States, it's for months or for years. And then a lot of people cut themselves to try to get out. And it's like random chosen. Why? If someone gets the DR. Of course, if you do drugs in prison or anything else, you have to be punished. You do something that's wrong. That's in the Netherlands the same. But why are you going to take away visits for a year? There is no logic. It doesn't make any sense. You know, if I do drugs in prison, and of course, and CO I get caught by a CO. Of course, I have to get a punishment because I shouldn't do that. You know, and if he would say, but that's also what he said.
I want to talk based on that too, because if you go on the internet, you type in guards in Massachusetts that have been caught selling drugs, or other states, it'll come up. But do you know, since this pandemic, this international pandemic, prisoners, all visits have been suspended. So family members are not going into the prisons, and yet many prisoners are still getting high. So now a lot of the advocates and others want to know, where is it coming from? If the families of prisoners are not going in, if the friends of prisoners are not going in, lawyers weren't even going in, where are these drugs coming from?
Yes, from staff.
So it's on the internet. The guards, a lot of guards officials have been caught bringing drugs in. So when the media talks about these, and let's face it, I'm sure prisoners get it in somehow, but the thing is, a lot of it's coming in through the prison staff. And these people are getting monies for having the prisoners sell it for them.
Yes,
and no one suspects
they money
because
with
it. They're
that's the same, but that's the same with the cell phones. One CO sells the cell phones, and another one, they get caught by another CO, and then the cell phone is taken away, and they have paid $300-$400. And it makes sense that they long for that cell phone because they want to have contact outside. And I also can understand if you do life in hell, because that's, these prisons are hell. Well, maybe I would want to have drugs too. I can understand it. You want to escape that hell, and it's a complete business inside. There is a complete prison business inside. I have spoken to a biker, I was in Florida. He did 4 years, and he explained for 2 hours how the business is going, how they make the cigarettes, how they sell the cigarettes. It's a complete business, and COs are involved in that because they don't have a lot of salary. It's like, so, you know, and those are all circles. I see a lot of circles, you know. There's a circle of the whole, in the big thing, there is a circle of, it's like, you know, if you open a clock, you see all these little radars, little elements. Those are all circles. It's like a clock with circles. You have the million dollar industry, it's a circle. You have the suppression of anger and aggression, it's a circle. You have the business, it's all kinds of circles that have to be broken. You know, like the title of the film and what you saw. And yes, CEOs are, but it's all known. And then for me arises the question, what is it that the mindset is not made? Because the case of the man in the shower, I mean, I live in the Netherlands. I know it since last year already. All kinds of cases, they are on the internet. Everybody knows it. Everybody looks at it, and nobody does anything. And there is a lot of randomness, you know. If you are, if a CEO have a bad day, you are getting beaten up. And it's not every CEO. There are also good CEOs, but there are too many bad CEOs. You cannot do that.
There was a riot in Massachusetts in January. A riot in January, and it turns out the prisoners were asking to have a certain guard removed because the guard was causing a lot of problems for them. And they were told they were going to have to deal with it. So apparently that's what happened. They ended up dealing with it themselves, and they ended up getting shipped out because some of the guards went to the hospital. But what they did, they went on an unprovoked attack after those prisoners were transferred out and started beating all the prisoners, started throwing them in solitary confinement, broken bones here and there. They were in the hospital. These are people that weren't doing anything, and this is what they did. In California several years ago, there was a prisoner. He was due to be released in 5 months, and a guard went up and claimed that this prisoner spit on him, and they gave the man 5 years. This is because he was getting ready to come out. When they throw somebody in prison for the rest of their lives, these prisoners have nothing, no incentive to do any good. So if anything happens to them, if a guard starts giving them a problem or whatever, they're more likely to go off on this guard because they have nothing to lose. This is the difference between those countries where you live, in Germany and England and Sweden, and Norway, all these countries.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference I would like to talk about with politicians, really, because the only thing that has to change is the mindset. I keep saying that, and because then everything changes, even in an existing system. I wonder what kind of people are allowed to do the training for CO. How are they screened before they start? Are they screened before they start? I also know about, there are these mine villages. They had mines, and the families all worked in the mines. But then the grandfather worked in the mine, and his father worked in the mine. But then the mines got closed, and he built a prison, such a big prison. And the son and the grandson, they cannot work in the mines anymore, so they work in the prison, as if that's the same. But if you work with incarcerated people, that's the same as when you work in psychiatry. Those are very vulnerable people. Yes, they have done something very wrong. So you have to learn them, you have to teach them. You have to teach them that they get inside, what I told you before, that they get inside in their own web of influence, what has been of influence in my life, what has been influenced on my crime, but also what does this crime tell me? Because the crime also contains important information about the one who committed that crime. So not looking with judgment, but looking as a happening, and of course the judge is the one who judges, and he says you are guilty, so you have a sentence. And it has to be done. I think the question is it should not be you do the crime, you do the time. And the question is not if one should do time in prison. The question should be how am I going to do my time in prison? Because incarceration, and then I'm not talking about sentence of 20 years or 30 years or longer, because that's insane anyway. Except when you're extremely dangerous. But if you are not extremely dangerous and you get, let's say, 5 years, we talk here about 5 years or 6 years or 2 years, then it's very important, I have to do 5 years. How am I going to do that? I am going to use that time to get insight in myself, to learn what responsibility is. Many people we learn it from our parents, or our teachers, but some people haven't learned that. Some people are not able to be responsible because they have a psychological disorder. But then you have to know, when someone is very heavily bipolar, or they have a narcissistic personality or other, then the picture becomes different. Those are very important things. And
People don't look at those things. That's the sad thing.
No, and that's you know, that's not only a sad thing. It's only also a stupid thing. It is. It's really insane.
People
stupid
look at
because
things
also community pays a lot of tax money to live in a dangerous society. There are men in prison who get free in the United States, and then I think, well, I'm glad there is an ocean between him and me. Because they have no treatment. They come out like the inmates. They are the victims of the randomness in a prison. It's so dangerous. They are only trying to survive prison instead of rehabilitation.
And that's what they need.
Yes, and it doesn't need to cost all the money. If, you know, when you say prison reform, yeah, that's great, but that takes years. Of course it takes years. It's a mindset for the incarcerated people. It's a mindset for staff. It's a mindset for community. It takes years. Also in the Netherlands, we are in a process. You know, it's not heaven here. We also have our things we have to deal with, and we know things go slow. But the mindset of seeing incarcerated people as people like you and me and everybody, that you can do today. That's what I said last week. You know, and sometimes I think I want to scream it off the roof. I would like to say that to politicians, because that can be done in the existing system. It has, you know, the human treatment does not need to wait until the whole prison system is reformed. That can start now. And that's for me also deeper justice. You know, a CEO doesn't need to be a psychologist or a psychiatrist, but he can be human. He can have a nice talk with an incarcerated man and say, hey, how are you doing today? How are you feeling today? That's a normal question, you know. You ask me, I ask you, we ask our neighbors. So I think a very important thing is that politician or key figures look at training of CEOs and the screening of people, because in jobs like in prisons, but also in when you work with, I have worked with psychiatric clients, I have worked with people with disabilities, you always have to be aware of the fact that you as the CEO or you as the mentor, you are in power. You always are in a position of power. And for as long as you are aware of that, you also are aware that you can treat the other person on an equal way, because not he deserves it, but it has to be that way. We all deserve it like that, you know? There is a lot of abuse of power, like the visits. You know, in the Netherlands, the visits is a right. In the United States, it's a privilege. And it seems the same. It seems the same because on the outside you see that in the United States we can visit our loved ones, and in the Netherlands we can visit our loved ones. But behind that, there is something different. In the Netherlands, it's a right. The incarcerated man has a right to receive visit. In the United States, it's a privilege. So I have to fall on my knees and I'd say, oh, thank you, Lord, prison. You feel what I mean. When I read that on the website, as someone outside, I already felt that feeling of power. I have to be grateful
power.
And thankful. You feel what I mean?
Power in the wrong hands is dangerous. It's like taking karate. No one should take karate if they have a bad temper. But it's the discipline. We have to remember, and the media has to remember, and everyone has to remember that law enforcement, prison guards, prison officials, prison employees, they're all human beings. They wear a uniform. I trained with the Department of Corrections in 2006. I trained as a mental health worker. I didn't stay with it because I didn't like the way that they acted. But what happens is, it's the individual themselves, because one, she was a female guard, her brother was a guard. And I used to talk to all the prisoners around me, and she used to say, oh, you're not supposed to talk. We're not supposed to talk to the prisoners. I brought it to my supervisor's attention, and she said, I talk to them all the time. She said, you can talk to them. So some people, they've got this gung-ho attitude about them that they're above. And I hate to say it, but even as a prisoner, we're not above anyone, because a prisoner could be inside. They could have been talked about like being the most a hardcore criminal, because they're hearing it from the media and from others. Until you get to know a person, you don't know what that person was experiencing. You don't know what they were going through. Some of them may have had reasons. I mean, not reasons, but reasons beyond their control for what they did. And people look at things either black or white. When my mother used to even say, there's two, sometimes three sides to every story. So unless I get all the facts, I can't judge someone. I can't ignore them, because you never know if that person can be there for you.
But even if you work inside the prison and you try to judge someone, then you go too far. The judge in court, he has the right to judge someone. And he said, okay, you committed that crime, so you get that and that life, that and that sentence. That's the task of the judge. The task of the people inside prison is to mentor the incarcerated people, not to judge. That's not my task.
Yeah.
I am not a judge in court. That has been, you know, so first he gets judged and he gets a sentence. That's not my task. My task is there to mentor the people, whatever they have done. That's, you know, if he is a murderer or he is innocent, to me, they both are incarcerated, and it's my task, my job, to mentor them, you know, to help them getting through. You know, when I had these individual interviews with people, the sessions with the incarcerated people, we did talk about crime, but I never talked about it in a judging way. And I've talked with people who committed a murder, and I've talked to people who were burglars, all kinds of people. So, but I always looked at the crime with the man, but as a happening. What happened? What does it tell you? When you have murdered a child, what part in yourself has been murdered? You didn't do it just simply like that. Something happened to you. What does it tell you? That's my task. And the judge in court, he says, you have murdered a child, or and you get that and that sentence. But I'm not a judge in court. Because if I am going to do the same as a judge in court, the imprisoned man never gets further. He keeps being in that judging environment. So he has no chance. What can he do? He gets paralyzed. It paralyzes the people. You know, if I make a mistake today, if my child, let's say, when my child makes a mistake and I keep on telling him that he made a mistake, and I go on and on and on and judging, and he paralyzes. He cannot learn from it, and he cannot go any further, because he always stays guilty. There's a difference between responsibility and guilt. You are guilty in court. You are found guilty, and you have to do your sentence. But that's when you have done your time, then the guilt is paid off. But you stay responsibility for what you did, for the good things, for the bad things. And that's why you have to learn. You go through that process of deeper insight. Okay, I was responsibility for what I did, and I will always stay responsibility for what I did. How am I going to cope with that? What does it tell me? How does responsibility play a role in my life? It's one of the most important subjects to work with incarcerated people.
Yeah. And
really, so those are things that... But I think when I look at the prison system in the United States, then you know, it should be abolished. You once said it. I think it should be abolished and completely become different. But in the meanwhile, before that ever happens, it first starts with the normal human treatment. Have a talk with the people. What you say, you know, you worked in the prisons and you talked with everybody. That's normal.
You know, it makes them feel human.
And
you wouldn't even know they were prisoners.
Say, please, what did you say? Sorry.
No, I was just saying it's normal. You wouldn't even know they were prisoners, because they felt connected. You know, someone was talking to them in a normal way, as if they were on the outside. But of course, this wasn't at a major prison. It was at a Bridgewater, which is a prison where they evaluate you, you know, and you're there for a certain period of time. before your trial. But it's still inhumane the way they treat prisoners in this country anyway.
Yeah, it is inhumane. And I think that politics should do research on
the thing
and change the way, change the mentality of the people who work in the prisons, because I don't understand these big excesses. Is that the right word? These are huge. There are crimes committed by COs on the incarcerated men who become the victims. You know, it's a complete change of roles.
And you know what they do with
these
people?
Thing.
These people that work for the Department of Corrections, when they do something wrong and they get fired because the public knows what they did, that they did something wrong, but then they get transferred to other prisons, other jails, different, you know, lesser maybe positions, but a lot of them get transferred to other places and they're still working, but no one realizes it because they're not in the prison system that they used to be in. So they're still doing like desk duty or they're still working for the departments in some way, but no one really knows. They keep it quiet. And I have examples of those people that are employed with the department. You know, I have names of some of them.
But what you said about some politicians are trying to work with for prison reform. That's what you mentioned.
Are they also
looking in that in that point? Are they looking into that? And what do they say about that? That's what I wonder about.
Sometimes they'll say they want to stay focused on one issue that they're working on. But there's a lot of issues. You know, prisoners right now, and this is a sad thing too. They're taking the leftovers from prisoners, they're grinding it up, and they're feeding it to prisoners, to other prisoners. And some prisoners have said that they were so hungry that they've done it themselves. They've eaten the garbage that these people put together for them because they had no choice. This is the kind of ignorance in the prisons in this country, and even in Massachusetts, especially right now in Massachusetts. They grind up the food from other prisoners and they feed it to prisoners that they're retaliating against. And these people have no choice but to eat it.
Yeah, sometimes they get food that's not destined for human consumption.
They put them in these prison cells without their belongings. A lot of them don't have their televisions. They don't have books. They have nothing but that cell and very, very little in that cell. And this is what they're expecting these prisoners to survive this psychologically. It's crazy.
While in the 50s there was already a evidence-based research with, they did it on monkeys to see what the effects are of solitary confinement. And then already was known how it damages the brains, because people who have been in solitary confinement for months, they cannot receive the stimulus anymore like we do, so they get scared.
Oh, they're working on that.
But
you
that
know,
was already
the,
known in the
50s.
That was already
Charlie
known
Sullivan.
In the 50s.
Charlie Sullivan is the founder of Cure International, or Cure National. And I just got an email from him today. He sends it around to everyone. But they've been working on that, what you just mentioned. Can you mention a little bit more about that again? The prisoner should be getting it.
Yes, I can. I will say it here. In the 1950s, so that's 70 years ago, I think, there were some experiments with monkeys. And I believe it was in the United States. Studying the effects of social isolation. One experiment involved taking monkeys who had been raised with other monkeys, so they were socialized and okay. They were put in what was amounted to a solitary confinement chamber, and that showed distress. One saw them repeatedly rocking and shaking. That's also what I saw in documentaries, what people do. This went on and on. They also showed a sort of compulsive behavior, and after some period of time, they brought them out these monkeys out and they put them again in a cage with other monkeys. These monkeys were massively impaired. They were frightened, hiding, and then they would have sudden aggression while attacking each other. One saw very different and abnormal behavior. And very important is, there was no recovery from this. One of the important clinical findings thought requirement is that people deprived of an adequate level of stimulation become intolerant of stimulation. They overreact because they have become hyper-responsive to it. They cannot stand it. That's why men getting out of solitary just hide in the room sometimes. They can't stand stimulation anymore. What also is noticed that people can suffer from delirium, and delirium is a serious disturbance in mental abilities that results in confused thinking and reduced awareness of the environment. So, and that was already known in the 50s. I also had that example, and maybe you read it. I wrote an essay on solitary confinement. This man who had been in solitary confinement for months, and then he was released straight from solitary confinement to the streets, and he came home, and there were only 5 people, his family, and he said it was as if I was in a football stadium with 5,000 people. And he couldn't cope with it, and he had a little caravan, a little camper, and he took his camper, and he lived in the woods and the mountains for months until his family picked him up and said, you have to go home, you are not in solitary confinement anymore, you have to try to live in society. And he tried, but he couldn't cope, and he ended back in prison, and in the end, you know, later on he was released again and again, and back in prison again and back in prison again. And then he was crying and he said, I cannot live on the streets anymore. I have to stay here in the prison for the rest of my life because I cannot cope anymore. He couldn't go to Walmart without getting crazy from all that stimulus. That's what solitary confinement does. And it is the sad thing is that it's, you know, that there is no recovery for a lot of people. But that this has been known
now,
in the 50s already.
Was that here in the U.S. or was that in Netherlands?
No, that was in the U.S.
That was in the U.S., yeah.
In the Netherlands, we do have a solitary confinement, but that's only for the max of 2 weeks. And
that's the way it should
be. And in these 2 weeks, there is a doctor, a physician, a doctor who visits the incarcerated man every day for a consult, and the doctor sees if he can cope with it. If he cannot cope with it, if it makes him crazy in the head, let me put it that way, then he's going back to his own cell/room, because it's more room than a cell. But then radio and TV can get taken away. So, you know, he has not follow the rules. He has his punishment, but that's punishment. It's never more than 2 weeks. And the less, if possible, you know, it's better the less than the full 2 weeks. But what I see in the States with months or sometimes, I don't know if years are still happening, but months, it's
crazy.
Yeah,
30-something years.
Unbelievable. But the thing, you see, what you see is when someone gets a DR, you know, let me say an example again. He's caught with drugs. Okay, so he has a DR and he gets sentenced to solitary confinement. What is he supposed to learn from solitary confinement if he's in there for 6 months or 4 months? You don't learn from it. So that's not rehabilitation. It's revenge, it's punishment. And that's the whole problem. If somebody commits a light crime and he gets 20 years or 25 years, what does he learn? It's not, there is no balance in it. It's like, it's, you know, what I said. In fact, a judge has to look at the whole picture of a person. I told you that also the last week, I think, if you have two men and they both commit the same crime, the same murder, the same, you know, the same environment, same murder, then still both crimes are different and have to look on a personal way, because the persons are different. It has to be personal picture. And because that's not done in the stage, you get the inmate, like a label. You know, if you have a word and you put the in front of it, you always get a label, you know. But there is no the inmate. The inmate does not exist. There are 2.2 million people incarcerated, not the inmate. And that's why I also said last week, and I keep saying it, the system in the United States has element of a concentration camp. It really has. I studied on it with my study philosophy, and I see these similarities. Like, you know, the humanity is taken away. In the concentration camp, there was also the Jew. And there are people say, yeah, but the Jews were innocent, and the offenders, yeah, they committed crime. Yes, but if you look behind the label, we talk about people. And the randomness, that's what scares me from the prison, from the system in the States. It's random. There is no logical, you know, if someone gets a punishment, a DR, and the sentence of isolation or whatever is related to that crime, then it makes sense. That's what I see in the Netherlands. You know, if you have a drug, and you go 2 weeks in solitary confinement, and that makes sense. But 6 months does not make sense. That's only...
No.
That's I don't know. Sometimes it feels like a game, a very scary game.
You know, that's why there's so many suicides.
Of course there's suicides.
Because
it's almost... Yes. And I also understand that people want to do drugs, because if you are high, you can escape the hell of prison. I can understand it. It might be, it's not good, but I can understand that people do everything to get, in their minds at least, get away from the hell of the system. And, you know, there is the level of the billion-dollar industry, and then I can understand, okay, that's money. It's insane. It's still insane, but okay, I can... Money always comes first. It's what you also see with the corona crisis. It's first the money and then the health. But if I look at the level we are talking about now, the incarcerated people and the staff inside, it feels like a game. There is, it's like a game between prisoners and COs. A scary game. A game. A power play. Power play.
Yeah.
And then I want to know. Come on, politicians, look into the training COs get, because it makes no sense. And the other insane thing is that what I said before is that a community pays so much tax money for a dangerous community, because if an inmate lives in a community, it's dangerous. If a human being gets released, then it's safe. But there are no human beings that are released. Of course, there are always exceptions, not that divided, but there are too many inmates released. And how are you going? And in the halfway houses, that's also military training, because COs, they look at the people like less than animals. If I don't talk to my dog, then I'm not good for my dog, and I'm talking about my dog. So if COs say I'm not talking to the inmates, what is he doing then? And they also sometimes feel heroic. That makes me puke. They say, oh yes, I go to my work and it's dangerous, and but when I go to bed at night, and I feel proud because today the community, I have helped the community being safe. And I say, come on, you are sick in your head. It's bullshit. Sorry that I use that word. I could say BS. Sorry. I'm Dutch. I'm allowed to say it. But you know, that makes it's a fairy tale. It makes no sense.
You know, the populace are the ones that have made these people feel heroic, because it's always a hero when they do their job. They're getting paid to do those jobs. And if they weren't so violent to the people that they're interacting with, then maybe the people they're interacting with would not be as violent as they have been. That's the sad thing about it, because society makes these people look like heroes when there's only one hero, our Most High. But they make these people feel like heroes because they're doing their job. And these people are not just doing their job. They're also, a lot of them are corrupt. A lot of them are doing more than their job. They're actually killing these people and alleging that it's suicide. You know, and a lot of the things that they do, people in the society are worshiping them like they're some kind of gods. They're not any gods. Yeah. People need to look at those that are, just like somebody mentioned in the reform and defunding the police and defunding the Department of Corrections. Pick out these bad ones and get rid of them. You know, don't give them more money until they start getting rid of these bad police officers and bad prison officials and guards. That money can be used to, it can be used to be treating these people in long-term residential treatment facilities and not prisons.
Exactly.
Prisons need to be shut down.
Yes, prisons need to be shut down. And if one commits a crime, the sentence should be much lighter, and it has to be used for self-incite, what I told you, to heal again. They have to, and they do their time, and they know they are guilty of the crime, but that's something people do in court. When you work with them in the prison, I'm not talking about guilt. I'm talking about responsibility, but not about guilt, because guilt paralyzes. You cannot develop yourself if you only feel guilty. And that's...
Yeah.
And I think it would save a lot of money, because there is much less recidivism. Now people go back and back and back. In prison, the inmate get released, so he's going... he has no inside the future, because he has done a long sentence, so he lost everything in the free world. So he has to build up, but the society doesn't want him, because the society keeps on judging him. You know, on Sundays they go to church, and on Monday they judge the incarcerated man. I'm sorry, I shouldn't put religion in it, but if you believe
but
in
that's what happens.
The forgiveness,
so-called
in
right?
Jesus. Yeah.
I want to say one quick thing before, because we have about a minute left. First of all, I think they need to establish long-term residential treatment programs and put people like yourself, and I hope that someday, Marion, you will talk to others and maybe get these things established, pilot projects. But to get these long-term residential treatment programs going with psychosocial therapists like yourself, you know, social workers, psychiatrists, psychologists, doctors, you know, medical and psychological, nurses, you know, get these things going and take these people out of prison and start doing something with it. I have to have you back on the show again, because we'll talk about it after the show, but I want you to come back on, because the first 20 minutes to a half hour, we always seem to have a problem anyway. But you want to say something?
Sorry.
You want to say something that... Say some last words before we close, and then we need to talk about having you on in another couple of weeks. But yes, do you have anything you want to say to the audience before we get closed down?
Well, I think I want to repeat again what I said last week. That's, I think, the most important message is that we really have to be aware of the fact that there are 2.2 million people, human beings incarcerated, and the inmate does not exist. And that's the most important thing that I want to say. And another thing, what I really want people to be, the listeners to be aware of, is I have also worked with victims. I'm sitting here, I know both sides, so I am from a neutral position. I find it very, very important to say, you know. I'm not from a emotional position in here. I've seen both sides. And I don't close my eyes for the crime that people have committed. But I always look at the human being behind it. And we can make that change. And we can make that change. We can make that change.
You know,
we
I
also
want to
connect
you.
Yes.
I want to connect you also with it's prisonerswithchildren.org, Ivana Gonzalez. I just got an email from her today, but apparently they work with they work with prisoners, female prisoners, and I assume male too. But I'd like to connect you with her as well, because I'm going to be getting in contact with them myself. But thank you so much for being on with us, Marianne. And we will talk about having you come on again. You send me a good day and time, and I'll get it set up so we can have you back on again. You're very informative. You're very knowledgeable of both sides, of both countries. And there's other countries as well. We have to stop this mass incarceration. But I want to thank you so much for being on with us.
Well, you're welcome.
It's been an honor.
It was an honor for me,
too. I look forward to having you.
Thank you very much.
I look forward to having you back on with us. And everyone can listen to the interview on the Internet. Just type in Marianne Jacobs from Netherlands Speaks, and it'll bring you to Blog Talk Radio with her interviews. Marianne Jacobs, and that's Marianne, M-I-R-I-A-M, Jacobs from the Netherlands. Thank you so much, Marianne. It was an honor having you on. And we look
Thank
forward to the
much
next
too.
Interview.
Okay. Me too.
Bye-bye.
Me too. Okay, bye-bye.